Vrinda. One time I was singing that in kirtan, and after Havi Prabhu told me he was in a kirtan once and a devotee was singing that and Prabhupada stopped the kirtan. He said, you must chant all five panchatattva. So this apparently is not a bona fide to sing during kirtan, but we can do it before class because Krishnadas Kaviraj has some chapters that open this way. So today we're reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 8, Talks Between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai. Text 66. Can repeat? Prabhu kahi eho bhaya age kaha ara. Rai kahe jnana shunya bhakti saja sar. Prabhu kahe eho bhaya age kaha ar. Rai kahe jnana shunya bhakti saja sar. Prabhu kahe, the Lord said, eho, this, bahya, external, age, ahead, kaha, speak, ara, further, rai kahe, Ramananda Rai replied, Jnana Shunya Bhakti. Devotional service independent of logic and empiric philosophy. Sadhya Sar. The essence of the perfection of life. Translation. After hearing this, the Lord, as usual, rejected it, considering it to be external devotional service. He again asked Ramananda Rai to speak further, and Ramananda Rai replied, "Pure devotional service without any touch of speculative knowledge is the essence of perfection." Srila Prabhupada's purport. In his Anubhashya commentary, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that this stage, devotional service mixed with speculative knowledge, as refers to the previous verse, is also external and not within the jurisdiction of pure devotional service as practiced in Vaikuntha Loka. As soon as there is some conception of materialistic thought, be it positive or negative, the service is not spiritual. It may be free from material contamination, but because there is mental speculation, the devotional service is not pure and freed from the contamination of material life. A living entity who wants to be completely pure must be above this material conception. The negation of material existence does not necessarily mean spiritual existence. After material existence is negated, spiritual existence, namely Sat-Chit-Ananda, still may not be manifested. Until one comes to the stage of actually understanding one's eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, he cannot enter into spiritual life. Spiritual life means becoming detached from material life and engaging in the loving service of the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore asked Ramananda Rai to explain something transcendental to devotional service mixed with speculative knowledge. A pure devotee is completely surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord, and only by his love does he conquer Krishna. We're getting a hint about the next verse here. Who cannot be conquered by anyone. Krishna always stands victorious over everything. No one can conquer him. One can attain the stage of pure devotion simply by fully surrendering. This is next corroborated by Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.3, wherein Lord Brahma, defeated by the potency of Sri Krishna, fully surrendered unto the Lord. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatya Deshatarine. This conversation between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai, it's somewhat of a daisy chain, you might call it. You know what a daisy chain is? One thing fits into the next thing and the thing before it. This is the way these verses are kind of tied together. And there's a theme here. Lord Chaitanya keeps saying, this is external. Just as in this verse, Prabhu Kahe Eho Baya. These four words keep coming up. Prabhu Kahe, Prabhu is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He keeps saying, Eho Baya. This is external. So the same thing has happened here. This is the beginning of the verse for today. Lord Chaitanya said, this is external. So, yeah, and Prabhupada translates it. After hearing this, the Lord, as usual, rejected it. So what did he reject? He rejected Ramananda Rai's proposition in the previous verse, or two verses, that devotional service mixed with empiric knowledge is the essence of perfection. So that was Ramananda Rai's, because Lord Chaitanya had also already rejected karma mishra bhakti, or devotional service mixed with karma. And the verse for that was yat karoshi yarishnashi, right? Yat jahosi didasi yat. No, sarvadharmam prichajya. Even more shocking. So he rejected that as having some karmic connection. And then he said, well, jnana mishra bhakti. Then for that, he quoted, brahma bhuta prasannatma na shochati na kankshati samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. So this is also a little surprising. that this verse refers to Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he would quote this verse over and over again, and the point that he would make invariably was that devotional service, when you're performing devotional service, you're automatically in Brahman. You're automatically in the Brahman platform. You don't have to endeavor separately to attain the platform of Brahman. Because, as the verse says, from Brahma-bhuta, then devotional service. So, I was trying to understand how this is about jnana, or jnana mishra bhakti. I was reading, I looked at it in the Bhagavad Gita, and the context of it, and also Bhurijan Prabhu in his book, Surrender Unto Me, he has quoted Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has especially pointed out that especially the verses previous to this, in fact I'll read the verse just before Brahma-bhuta Prasannatma. It's a kind of a long verse, but it says, being purified by his intelligence and controlling the mind with determination, giving up the objects of sense gratification, being freed from attachment and hatred, one who lives in a secluded place, who eats little, who controls his body, mind, and power of speech, who is always in trance and who is detached, free from false ego, false strength, false pride, lust, anger, and acceptance of material things, free from false proprietorship and peaceful, such a person is certainly elevated to the position of self-realization. So this is about the jnani making progress to the platform of Brahman, giving up this, giving up that. There's actually quite a few verses in Bhagavad Gita about the platform of Brahman, which is equivalent to the platform of jnana, jnana realization. We find many verses like this also in the teachings of Jatabharata to Maharaj Rahugana about equanimity and peacefulness and not being disturbed and so on. So this is, you know, Shanti, the platform of Brahman. So this is the verse that leads up to this Brahma-bhuta prasannatma na shochati na kankshati. So what is the nature of this Brahman platform that's described? Prasannatma. There's some, Prabhupada translates it as fully joyful. Many times when Prabhupada would quote this verse, Brahma-bhuta prasannatma, he would say the devotee is very jolly. That was the word he would use. Very jolly. So jolly or joyful. Devotee is joyful. It's funny, something is all, you know, when you're a new devotee, sometimes somebody says something to you and it sticks in your mind throughout your career in Krishna consciousness. So I was a brand new devotee and I was washing pots in the San Francisco temple and Nalini Kanta Prabhu was there. And he said something like, doesn't this make you happy? Prabhupada says we engage in devotional service will always be joyful. Devotional service is joyful. So Brahma-bhuta prasannatma. So the Brahma-bhuta stage also, there's some kind of joy there. At least there's a relief. There's a relief from the material existence, all the suffering of material existence. So there's a kind of pleasure there. And Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita that the Brahma-bhuta platform is the platform of bliss. Or at least we can say there's no bliss until you get at least that far. It's not real bliss, it's not pure ananda, but there's some happiness there. The soul, prasannatma, evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogata bhagavat tattva vijnana mukta sangasya jayate. This prasanna or prasannatma is mentioned also in the first canto of Bhagavatam, second chapter. That service, that section about developing. Now, of course, what we're seeing is that there are different ways to get to the Brahman platform. We go up to bhakti, and because we attain bhakti, even in early stages, there's some, Prabhupada would say, for example, that devotees are on Brahman platform even in the practicing stage, even in the stage of sadhana, because in effect, they're Brahman realized. Because what does it mean to be Brahman realized? It means to serve Krishna, to be transcendental to this material world in service to Krishna. So the Bhagavatam says, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, that verse, Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu, when all of the, or most of the impurities are washed away from the heart by the practice of bhakti, by serving the person Bhagavat and book Bhagavat, then Tadara Jistamo Bhava Kamalobadayasche, Cheta Etaranavidam Stitam Satve Prasidati. Then the modes of passion and ignorance become washed away and one becomes situated in the mode of goodness. So the Nashta Prayeshu verse says, almost pure. Now we're talking about real purity. Shuddha Sattva, Evam Prasanna Manaso, Bhagavad Bhakti Yogata. The Acharyas say this verse, which says, then you could get pure knowledge of God from that stage, when you're in the Shuddha Sattva stage. Then, without any material contamination, then you can get pure knowledge of God, and then you can actually engage in devotional service. So the devotees, they're on that stage, whereas the jnanis, they attain Brahma-bhuta, but from there they have to make a choice. What am I going to do? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur talks about this. He says that there are those who, like the, we have our examples, the Atmaramas, Shukadeva Goswami and the Kumaras, they engage in devotional service. I find it interesting that the Kumaras are often mentioned as, you know, that the Brahman realized aspect of the Kumaras, their stage of neutrality. But they're actually great devotees. They have their own sampradaya. There are many wonderful verses spoken by the Kumaras, glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they're certainly pure devotees of the Lord. But they're sometimes, they're put into that category. In fact, they may be considered jnana mishra bhakti because they're so, jnana is so prevalent in their consciousness or their approach to devotional service. So in any case, they take to devotional service, but there are others who, from the Brahman platform, they want to merge into Krishna. They see the light and they want to enter the light. That's the way the impersonalists think. I want to become one with that. I just had an interesting experience. I went to see an Ayurvedic practitioner the other day. And he lives at... Because he's interested in Ayurveda, he's an American. But he has a lot of association with impersonalists. So... one of the things he was prescribing, he said, you know, as part of medicine is to be happy. You have to have a happy life. You should look for happiness. Be joyful. It's good for your health, basically. It's part of it. And he said, I know it's a little hard for you. He knew I was a devotee, obviously. I told him. So he was familiar with Prabhupada. And he said, it's harder in your path because you have this distinction. It's harder because... We're one, so it's easier for us. You know, we see we're one with God, but you have this separation from God, so it's a little harder for you. So it wasn't the opportune time to get into a debate with him, but I did explain that our philosophy is simultaneously one and different from God. So I was thinking this is their idea, you know. This is somehow better to become one with God. Or it's easier. Of course, Krishna doesn't say that in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says that's the hard path, those who are trying to do that. It's easy for devotees. You just have to worship Krishna. Krishna takes care of everything. So there are those who go in that direction. Whereas the devotees, now all these qualities that are mentioned here, of course, prasanatma, another point Prabhupada would make is that when you're a devotee, then you have all these things. A devotee has these characteristics. He is na shochati, na kankshati. He doesn't hanker or lament. So this is a stage of equanimity also, that the impersonalists, they want to come to this stage, not being agitated. Of course, that's the remarkable thing about the four Kumaras. They were supposed to be on that stage of not being agitated. But kinjoka mishtatul Tulsi Makaranda Vayo Sankshova Makshara Jutam Apichitta Tando. when they smelled the tulsi and saffron from the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, then they started quivering, shaking. Pashu paki jure, pashana vidare. It's like in that song. Prabhupada translates jure as crying, hearing Lokanath Swami commenting on this, and he said they're swaying back and forth. Maybe the weeping is involved also. So when the birds and beasts hear the gunagata, the glorification of the qualities of Gaura Nithai, then they weep also. There's no equanimity there, no balance. They fall over and the stones melt. But devotees are, of course, they're equal in happiness and distress in this material world. Actually, this Ayurvedic practitioner, he was also preaching. He quoted a verse from the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita about being equipoised. Don't be in anxiety, because anxiety causes a lot of physical problems. So we say that same thing. I was thinking this idea. Yes, it's so true that he was telling me to live in the now. This is very popular today, about living in the now. But this is true. Actually, we have the same philosophy. Na shochati na kankshati. What's shochati and kankshati? Shochati means lamenting for what's happened in the past. And kankshati means, what is it? Desiring, or at least thinking about, with desire involved, obviously, what's going to happen in the future. We're hoping things will be better, or this is going to turn out right, or whatever. So na shochati na kankshati is about the past and the future. So just as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, act with times that are with thee, in progress thee shall call. So we also think like that. Right now, let me serve Krishna. That's how we become equal in happiness and distress. And sama sarveshu bhuteshu, equal to all living entities. So of course, the devotees are the best. They're the emblems of being equal in happiness and equal to all living entities. Why? Because they give Krishna consciousness to everyone. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu set the example without considering who was fit and who was not. They're giving Krishna consciousness to everyone. So the Lord Chaitanya rejected this Brahma Bhuta verse. He thought there's some jnana mixed in here. Especially for those who are making gradual process, step by step up the yoga ladder. Somewhere recently I was hearing Prabhupada saying something about how all yoga has some aspect of jnana to it. So we also have jnana, but our jnana is, in fact, in the definition of diksha, it says the guru is one who gives divya jnana. But our jnana, of course, means learning about Krishna. It's not mental speculation. It's not that kind of jnana. So this verse we're reading today has two parts. So first, get back to it here. After hearing this, the Lord, as usual, rejected it. So he asked Ramananda Rai to speak further. So then what did Ramananda Rai say? Without any pure devotional service, without any touch of speculative knowledge, is the essence of perfection. So we're going to see in the next class that this is what Lord Chaitanya finally accepted. And the verse, which is the next verse that Lord Chaitanya, or that Ramananda Roy quoted, Jnane prayasa mudapasya namanta eva. Every time Ramananda Roy says something, he makes a point, and then he quotes a verse to back it up. So he's made the point in this verse today, and he's going to back it up next week. So Jnane prayasa mudapasya namanta eva, jivanti san mukaritam, bhavadiya vartam, stane stita shrutigatam tanuvan manobhir, ye prayasho jito jita jita jito pyasita istriyokyam. So this is a very famous verse spoken by Lord Brahma. Let's see. Oh yes, I did quote on it. Actually, I want to read the verse in purport, because the purport is just amazing. So this is the translation from the 10th canto. Now Srila Prabhupada, he commented on up to chapter 13. And then chapter 14, this is in chapter 14, Lord Brahma's prayers. It has so many verses that Prabhupada would quote. So the translation to this verse is, those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of the speculative knowledge, and with their body, words, and mind offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees. I like the way this is phrased. We usually think of dedicating our lives to Krishna. This is dedicating their lives to the narrations of Krishna's personality and activities, which are vibrated personally by you personally and by your pure devotees, certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. So purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Here the word udapasya clearly indicates that one should not even slightly endeavor to understand the absolute truth by the process of mental speculation, for it inevitably carries one to an imperfect, impersonal understanding of God. The word jivanti indicates that a devotee who always hears about Krishna will go back home, back to Godhead, even if he can do nothing except maintain his existence and hear topics concerning the Lord. Hoodie bowl, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Srila Sanatana Goswami has explained the words tanu van manobhi by the body, words, and mind in three ways. And then we'll see at the end, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds the fourth way. So listen to this. This is so nice. So three ways by body, mind, and words. Tanu va manobhi. In reference to devotees, through their body, words, and mind, they are able to conquer Krishna. Thus becoming perfect in Krishna consciousness, they can touch his lotus feet with their hands, call him to come with their words, and attain his direct audience with their mind, simply by thinking about him. So body, mind, and words. In the case of non-devotees, the words tanuva and manobi refer to the word ajita, unconquered, as Krishna is referred to in this verse, and indicate that those not engaged in loving service of Lord Krishna cannot conquer the absolute truth by their bodily strength, verbal expertise, or mental power. Despite all their endeavors, the ultimate truth remains beyond their reach. In reference to the word jitta, this reminds me of the explanation of the Atmarama verse, how Lord Chaitanya analyzed everything in so many different ways, connecting different parts of the verse. So here he's connecting, Sanatana Goswami is connecting the words tanuvamano bir to the word jitta in the verse. In reference to the word jitta, conquered, the words tanuvan manobi indicate that the pure devotees of the Lord conquer his body, words, and mind. Lord Krishna's body is conquered because he always remains by the side of his pure devotees. Lord Krishna's words are conquered because he always chants the glories of his devotees. And Lord Krishna's mind is conquered because he always thinks about his loving devotees. So this is how the devotees conquer Krishna. He can't control himself. He has to talk about them, think about them, and go to them. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has explained the words tanuvan manopi in regard to the word namanta. So here we have a fourth understanding. Offering obeisances, namanta, offering obeisances. He explains that the devotees can take full advantage of the transcendental topics of the Lord by offering all respects to those topics with their body, words, and mind. One should engage his body by touching the ground with his hands and head while offering obeisances to the topics of the Lord. One should engage his words by praising transcendental literatures such as Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, as well as the devotees who are preaching such literatures. And one should engage his mind by feeling great reverence and pleasure while hearing the transcendental topics of the Lord. In this way, a sincere devotee who has acquired even a small amount of transcendental knowledge about Lord Krishna can conquer him and thus go back home, back to Godhead, for eternal life at the Lord's side. So nice, huh? So I'll stop here. Let me just read the translation again. My dear Lord, neither I nor anyone else can estimate the potency of this. Oops, I'm sorry. I'm in the wrong place here. Oh, I see what I did. Okay. Text 66. After hearing this, the Lord, as usual, rejected it, considering it to be external devotional service. He again asked Ramananda Rai to speak further, and Ramananda Rai replied, "Pure devotional service without any touch of speculative knowledge is the essence of perfection." Any questions? Pushkar Prabhu?
I was just going back to this verse from Buddha and the purport in the Gita. Prabhupada says, one is engaged in pure devotional service, so the Supreme Lord is already in a state of liberation called Brahma-Bhuta, oneness with the Absolute. Without being one with the Supreme, the Absolute, one cannot render service unto Him. In the Absolute conception, there is no difference between the served and the servitor, yet the distinction is there in a higher spiritual sense. So he's already affirming that we're already one. That's right there.
So that's the way of Prabhupada's tying in the jnana aspect with that commentary.
Yeah.
Because the jnanis are, they see the oneness.
It starts off, that purport. To the impersonalist, achieving Brahma Buddha, becoming one with the Absolute, is the last word. But then he's saying, we're already on that stage. And then you have to go. Yeah. So that's the idea. It's all written right there. Whatever Lord Chaitanya said didn't make it up.
Even if he did, it's okay. Anything else? Thakur?
Hi, Krishna, thank you. I'm thinking about the peacefulness that we often surrender. Or seem to leave behind when we embrace relationships, the lawyer relationships, or our projects. It seems to be a different kind of sense of security that comes with being properly situated, but it's not always peaceful in an ordinary way.
That's like the letter a devotee wrote to Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, I read so many places that devotees are liberated. He said, but I don't feel like that. And Prabhupada gave the example of being in a boat. It's just like you're on the ocean. And when you're in the ocean, you're drowning. Of course, you're not. But you get saved. You get brought onto the boat. But still, because it's a rocky sea, you may still feel some rocking there. So we're above the ocean. We're liberated in that sense, but we haven't made it quite all the way there yet. We're still on our journey home, so there's going to be some rocking of the boat. That was one way Prabhupada explained it, and we can understand it. And as I said, as you might say, that we're liberated in principle, and so in some ways it's not realized knowledge. On the other hand, Prabhupada, there's one lecture, well, I may have said it many times, but he said, if you're not happy, then you're not properly executing devotional service. So that's something we always have to analyze. Naturally, there's going to be some trouble. Even Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, the troubles come, and I like them. They make me stronger. Kunti Devi said, troubles come, then I think of Krishna. Our tendency is that when life is easy, then we forget Krishna. So that's part of Krishna maybe making things a little uncomfortable for us so that we'll turn to Him and become completely purified. Even the gopis, there were some that weren't quite 100% purified, so they had to face some challenge in order to go to Krishna. They had to finally reject any attachment to any social commitment or obligation, or morality. That was a big sacrifice because they were naturally chaste, moral girls. So that challenge was put before them, and they passed it. So there are different reasons why we're not always in ecstasy. Lakshmi Murli Prabhu?
I touched on it in what you just said, but I was thinking about this person and the concept of happiness is, you know, if you assume that when you go to the spiritual world, your happiness will be disappearing into the oneness, whatever. And you say be happy in the material world, then happiness is a very relative thing. Your happiness may be my misery. I was just reading, someone made a comment, Radhanath Swami made a comment that, that you know, I may listen to music. My parents may listen to music, and they're it may be very make them feel peaceful, but I may listen to that same music and think it's horrible, and they may listen to the music I listened to when I was young and, you know, plug their ears. Even I would plug my ears at this point. So you know, then your happiness or the concept of happiness, of course, is very mixed with the absence of suffering, and it's very relative.
Yeah.
So then absolute happiness is making Krishna happy, which, how do you do that when you're one with him, first of all? And second of all, that's why even material misery can be happiness to a devotee, because when you're engaged in service, even if it's physically or mentally kind of not comfortable, but you know you're engaged in his service, and under the order of the spiritual master, you're making him happy, so that is your happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not?
I think a lot of times what people are, what they're talking about is more of an attitude. And that's the same thing with us. In other words, yeah, there may be ups and downs in life, but I just try, and above it all, I try to have a positive attitude. And in that sense, you might say, I'm happy. So that's also there for us, in that tate nukampam susumikshamano, and that verse, that's basically the idea, at least part of it, that we go through life and we're not just lamenting all the time, oh, I'm suffering. We have a positive, well, I'm going back to Godhead. Krishna says, if I just live, and Krishna, just like we read in this purport on that verse, Gyane Prayasam verse, that we hear Krishna Katha, we'll go back to Godhead. So we have that. There's always that undertone should be there in our lives, that we have that hope. For the non-devotees, of course, it's a hopeless situation. Moga asha, moga karmana, everything. They'll be defeated. Parabha, vastavara, bodhijato. They're just everything. Whatever they think. So they may be falsely upbeat, but what's the use of that when you're entering the slaughterhouse? It's not. But we know whatever's happening to me, that's Krishna's mercy. And that thought in itself, that's why we're over and over again, we're trained to think that way. Krishna is behind everything. To see Krishna in everything. Then you might say, actually, we've conquered Krishna because Krishna is tending to me. Krishna has taken responsibility for my life. I think about this idea of Ishwara Bhava. You know, the Kshatriya is called Ishwara Bhava. Ishwara Bhava means want to take control. So who has the most Ishwara Bhava? Krishna. He's Paramesh, he's the supreme. Ekala Ishwara Krishna. So he likes to take control too. He's just waiting for us to say, Krishna, take control. And he says, okay, I'll take control. I'll do whatever is required. I'll send whatever is required your way to make you, help you come back to me. So we should always be thinking that way, because Krishna's motivation is always love. Whatever he's doing, it's love that drives him. And he wants the devotees to come back to him. He knows that that's their happiness. I was just reading that section in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Volume 1, Chapter 4, talks about the internal reasons for Lord Chaitanya coming. It's so wonderful. It's a beautiful chapter. So there, that idea that Krishna himself is thinking that I just give everybody else bliss. I was thinking, we hear about the devotees and their transcendental ecstatic transformations and so on. We don't hear that so much about Krishna. So it's like Krishna's realizing that. They're getting more bliss than I am. I'm the one that's just giving all because I'm so sweet. And I want to see what it's like to be on the other side looking at me and seeing my beauty, tasting my sweetness. So he knows that the happiness of the devotee is greater than my own happiness. That's what God thinks. So that's part of his motivation to get us back. And those who have Krishna Bahirmukha, those who have turned away from Krishna. So he's very inspired. Inspiration is important in spiritual life. So no one is more inspired than Krishna. He's so inspired to get us back. So the devotee has this thought should always be there. We're training ourselves, at least, to see, oh, Krishna, this is Krishna. Somehow I may not always understand why Krishna is doing that. Even Bhishma Dev couldn't understand, so what to speak of us. But at least we accept it on principle. For some reason, Krishna is doing this. I need to see his hand in everything that happens to me. So why? Because he wants us to be happy, really happy. Okay, oh, Manumati.
Distress. I mean, I was thinking how when Srila Prabhupada was leaving and he was sick, and I hear that the doctor said that, you know, you have too much anxieties of your disciples, you know.
Mm.
And I was thinking, here it is, Srila Prabhupada, even at that stage, took the greatest anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it may seem unhappy or... but it was the greatest happiness. Or you even think about Lord Chaitanya, he was in greatest anxiety. I don't know where there was happiness when he was in separation for Srimati Radharani, or, you know, or Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani, or even the gopis there, they have the greatest anxiety all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that's the greatest happiness, you know.
Yeah. With Prabhupada, it reminded me of that. I think he probably was in New York, in the elevator, if I remember, where he said, I want the benediction to die fighting for Krishna, something like that. Die on the battlefield fighting for Krishna. So anxiety is part of, you know, fighting the battle for Krishna. That's what we're doing here. We've been enlisted into the army to fight on Krishna's behalf. So anxiety is part of the fight, obviously. We have to always be thinking, Prabhupada said, always be thinking how to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. So naturally, there's going to be anxiety involved in that, because there's so much opposition. The energy is always against us. But there's so much power in that. We get the blessings of Krishna. So that's our happiness. Just like people, I mentioned before how people get happiness by climbing Mount Everest. You know, their nose falls off and their toes fall off. But somehow, when they're done, they have some happiness, even without their nose, because they've accomplished something. You know. They've done something they love, they really wanted to do. You know. What is it? That's what inspired. It's some kind of love, right? Love for accomplishing the task. So when you have love, then you can do amazing things, and you get happiness from it. What to speak of loving Krishna. And, yes. Yeah, how do you get happiness when you merge?
Because how can you love a situation?
Because it's not, I mean, Prabhupada calls it happiness, but it's not in one sense. It's not, it's just, you know, floating. It's sort of like floating there and not really experiencing much. Yeah, rasa, there's no happiness without rasa. Which is kind of funny, because a lot of these impersonalist groups, they're more into hugging and, you know, that kind of thing, the relationship, better than we are, you know, in that sense. But then they want to ultimately discard all of that. So, yeah, they talk about bhakti and they talk about God. And so they're speculating. That's the problem. They're speculating. So when you speculate, you get it wrong. You don't think right. Vimuktamanina, Krishna says in the Bhagavatam. They think they're liberated even. Okay, Thakur?
Just a question about these different relationships to the Lord that Ramananda Raya is presenting, and it goes from external to internal, it seems, and each level is more complete surrender than the next. Is that accurate?
Yes.
And so then, as it gets past where he is now and goes from the neutral to the dasya to the parental,
right.
Does that mean there's an increase in completeness and surrender with each level?
Yes, everyone. We read about the rustles. There's something, you know, the cowherd boys have something, but they have a little something that's missing. They don't have the intimacy that's there in the Vatsalya rasa. And then the gopis have everything. There's, it's all inclusive. So yes, we're seeing different levels of devotional service. Something I've been thinking about recently, how even in the beginning stages of devotional service, sometimes we say, well, I have no love for Krishna. I don't really have love yet. But there are some aspects of love that in the beginning we should have. Just like, for example, gratitude. We should have some gratitude. And if we do have gratitude, to Prabhupada at least, if not Krishna, where is Prabhupada's mercy coming from? It's coming from Krishna. So that's love. That's an early stage of love, to have some gratitude. And there are other qualities like that. So we go from there, we go step by step, more and more qualities, deeper and deeper, until we enter bhava eventually. Yes?
But each stage, like for instance, the coward boys, they're not considering that they're missing anything.
Well, no, whatever. They don't think. When you reach the perfect stage, yang labdha chaparam labham manyate nadikam tata. This is in the sixth chapter of the Gita. When one realizes Krishna consciousness, of course Prabhupada puts everything in the context of Krishna consciousness, the devotee thinks there's nothing more than this. Of course, in the early stages, one might think like that, but then actually one goes higher and higher and higher. Just like Gopakumar, he keeps thinking, wow, I've made it, this is it. And then, he hears something new about some higher stage, and then he gets attracted to that and that and that. So that also was there in some sense. But of course, it's not that the gopas are thinking, boy, the gopis really had it good, I wish I was a gopi. Of course, it's a spiritual world, everything is possible, but we don't have to talk about exceptions to the rule. There may be some here and there. That's the general way it works. We'll find out when we go. Yes?
Just a quick comment on the gratefulness. I find it very important in my own life to help reorient my mind from problems to Krishna. It's very effective.
I was saying I've been studying Ayurvedic principles somewhat, and even that it's said there that one should be grateful before one eats, even from a physical sense. It sets something in your mind that helps your body receive this food and becomes more nourishing if one has a grateful attitude about receiving this. Of course, receiving it from God. Of course, in many traditions, there's saying grace before one eats. So gratitude is very important. All right, let's stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.